Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Red Sox Review on WEEI.
The 0-2 is swung on, drilled in the air toward right field. Castellanos on the move, still going back to the track, to the wall, and it is gone. It is out of here, a two-run shot the other way for Christian Vasquez.
Recapping the Red Sox win against the Tigers.
Xander swings, ground ball, fair ball, down the line at third, this will get a run in. Here comes Hernandez to score, they're going to try and score two. Betts rounding third, coming home, he is in. It's a double, two RBIs for Xander Bogaerts.
Dial 617-779-7937. Red Sox Review with Brian Barrett on WEEI.
All right, what do you make of your Boston Red Sox right now as they sit nine games back of the Yankees at the unofficial halfway point of the season? We're officially past the halfway point of the season, but we're at the All-Star break. 617-779-7937. Okay. So I look at Dave Dombrowski right now, and you're starting to think to yourself, maybe he missed out on his opportunity to upgrade this team, because when the Red Sox could have flexed their financial muscles was in the offseason to pick up relievers, but they decided not to do it because they essentially thought the approach they were going to use last year was going to work again. I honestly think this is very, very arrogant, where they were puffing their chests out and saying, hey, we told everybody it was going to work last year. Remember, the Red Sox were killed in this town. Not even just here, like nationally with people that cover Major League Baseball, for their lack of doing anything at the deadline to upgrade their bullpen. They said, nah, we got it. It's going to be all good. And they had the last laugh because it worked out for them. But this year, in the offseason, they let Kimbrel and they let Joe Kelly go, and they don't do anything about it. And that's the thing that irritates you right now, is because you have an offense that is better than the Yankees in a lot of statistical categories. The only thing the Yankees, in terms of the statistics, are better than you at slugging percentage right now and home runs. That's it. The Red Sox are better in OPS. They're better in on-base percentage. They're better in average. And more importantly, they're better in runs. They've scored more runs than the Yankees, yet they sit nine games back in the division. And that's because the approach was to just roll out with the guys you had a year ago, minus two of them in Joe Kelly and Craig Kimbrel, and you were going to get the same results from the bullpen. Well, you didn't play that many games in the postseason, remember? You only lost once to the Astros, once to the Yankees, and once to the Dodgers. Like, you think you could have played four or five more games with the way that you were treating the bullpen when you're using all these starters? And now you approached a regular season, and you said, yeah, we'll make it work. We found Ryan Brazier out of A-ball or out of Japan last year. Yeah, I get this Marcus Walden kid from Indy Ball. That'll work out. Yeah, how has this plan worked out for you? Brazier again today. Absolutely atrocious. The guy's an absolute train wreck. He's given up seven home runs this season, as many as David Price has. And David Price is a starter. Think about that. He's pitched about 43 and two-thirds more innings this season than Ryan Brazier, and they've given up the same amount of home runs this season. So I just look at the spending, right? $23 million this season on the books for Nathan Eovaldi. What would you say? He's been a negative contract, right? Even worse than negative. Like, Nathan Eovaldi has killed this team in so many different ways, because you don't have a fifth starter, and that taxes the bullpen. So that contract has killed this team, and Dave Dombrowski has done nothing about it. And then you also factor in the Steve Pierce contract, which was over $6 million per season. Again, Steve Pierce. These two guys are the players that Dombrowski got at the deadline last year. So it's like he's puffing his chest out. See what I got at the deadline last year? It's going to work again this year. Well, it's backfired. And the scary thing about Pierce is this. Did you not know Chavis was this good? Because then you don't have any intel on your farm system. Did you not realize Chavis was going to be this good of a player? Because you really didn't need him. What's Steve Pierce's role on this team if he ever gets back? Because we all know they said it's going to be another month with this knee injury now he's dealing with. He was coming back from a back injury and he hurt his knee. You can't make this stuff up as it pertains to the Red Sox. What is his role on the team? Useless. He's useless. I mean, there's no point. So I just look at it from a spending aspect. Joe Kelly, who you think would be somebody that the Red Sox would be interested in bringing back, because the Red Sox finally got value on Joe Kelly. For so many years, everybody was aggravated with, oh, he's got all this talent, we can't figure it out. And then finally, you put him into the bullpen a couple of years ago, and it still didn't click all the way. And then last year, like midway through the season, he kind of took off. And the guy was unbelievable during the postseason. You would think that that's the type of guy you'd like to keep around. So I'm just doing it from a mathematical equation here. You say you keep Joe Kelly at the $8 million he got per year from the Dodgers, and say Adam Ottavino, who should have been a target. Everybody around here was saying he should have been a target. He got $9 million per season from the Yankees. That's $17 million for those guys this season. Say, hypothetically, you dished out $17 million to split between Kelly and Ottavino this season instead of Pierce and Eovaldi. Where is this team at? And I get that Joe Kelly's numbers weren't great at the beginning of the season, but the Dodgers messed around with his delivery and whatnot. He's had eight straight scoreless appearances. So Joe Kelly's back to being the Joe Kelly that we're all familiar with. I also wanted to get to this, and if you want to hop on board, weigh in on anything that's going on with the Red Sox right now, certainly welcome to do so. 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next 2 hours or so. So Dave Dombrowski, earlier in the week, or on Friday, I believe he said this, to Alex Speer of the Boston Globe. Quote, "We built our ball club for them to be our strong suit," referring to the starting rotation. "I don't think it's been what we expected or hoped. They're a very talented group of pitchers. They're the guys who are supposed to carry us. Really, that's why I think they've been fine. They've been okay, but I can't say they're really carrying us at any point. The bullpen keeps getting pointed out all the time. I think a lot of times unfairly. It's just collectively, in a lot of places, we haven't done as well as we hoped." So first of all, I love how he says in this quote the other day, "The bullpen keeps getting pointed to all the time. I think a lot of times unfairly." That's almost like, you guys are blaming me too much, right? Yeah, you guys keep calling out the bullpen, blaming me too much. And then he's pointing at the starters saying, the starters are supposed to carry this team. Well, then the question I would ask Dave Dombrowski is, what's wrong with your starters? Because these are the guys that you chose to go into the season with. These are the guys, they're all your guys. You've handpicked all these guys. Now, Price clearly has worked. Price has been incredible this season. But Chris Sale's a guy that you wanted to extend last offseason. He's gone from a 2.11 ERA to a 4.04 ERA. If you look at Erod, yeah, he was pretty good on Friday, but he has a 4.65 ERA on the season. That's up from 3.82. You look at Rick Porcello, he's having the worst season of his career. Career high, or I should say a career worst in terms of his ERA, he's at 5.33. A 5.33 ERA. So Erod has been worse than he was last season. Porcello's taking a precipitous fall. Chris Sale, in terms of the ERA, it's almost 2 runs worse than it was a season ago. And then also you look at the fact that one of the guys you gave out money to is Nathan Eovaldi, and Nathan Eovaldi has been worse than a zero. He's been a negative because he hasn't pitched since April 17th. So you're pointing to all these issues with the starting rotation as trying to take some of the heat off the bullpen. It still all comes back to you. It still all comes back to Dave Dombrowski with this team, because he's the one that decided Nathan Eovaldi is worth $17 million per season, despite the fact that the guy's had 2 Tommy John surgeries, 1 in high school and 1 as a major leaguer. And then Nathan Eovaldi is somebody that had a elbow procedure last year with the Rays, and he had that same elbow procedure again with the Red Sox this year. The elbow for Nathan Eovaldi, can we just acknowledge the fact that thing is a ticking time bomb to the point where we don't think he's ever going to come back as a starter this season? He's going to be out of the bullpen. Okay, so that's the guy that you chose to hand $17 million per season to. Okay, so some of these issues with the starting rotation, it's on you, man. Like, you're the one that decided to keep all these guys. You're the one that decided to hand out all this money and whatnot. So you're saying all this stuff about the starting rotation. Well, you're also the guy that has completely taxed the bullpen because you don't have enough arms back there. And you're the one that has hurt your starting rotation because the guy you identified as like a future star of this organization, if you will, is Nathan Eovaldi. There's a reason a lot of other teams across Major League Baseball weren't interested in Nathan Eovaldi as an everyday starting pitcher. You know why? Because Nathan Eovaldi is somebody that has a career 4.21 ERA. So that's why, like, there were a couple other teams that were interested. Remember, the Astros were interested, but then they're like, wait, hold on. The Red Sox may go up to $17 million. No, we're good. Dave, you can take Nathan Eovaldi for that type of money. And you gave him 4 years. 4 years. an injury pro player, prone player, rather. You gave this guy 4 years on a contract. I also look at this as a bigger, broader point with the Red Sox organizationally. And I look at Erod, because Erod the other night, I really wish I could have seen him gone deeper into that game, because he would have gone deeper into that game. Because if you think about it, the reason he didn't go deep is because the 2 hour rain delay. So there's nothing Erod could have done in that particular outing. He had gone 5 innings. He pitched well. He gave up only 4 hits, 1 earned run. And the 1 run was Candelario doubling to left, and it took JD forever to throw the ball in. So even that run that Erod gave up the other night really wasn't on Erod. It was more about on JD, if you will. But he would have gone 7 the other night, in my estimation. He was only at 76 pitches through 5 innings, or at least he would have got through the 6th inning. We can all acknowledge that, right? And last outing versus the Yankees, 2 earned and 5 and a 30. Pitched well against the Yankees in London. So that's 2 starts in a row, and I get that the Tigers aren't great, but you start to see the flashes with Erod. But then you look at the numbers, right? And you think to yourself, 4.65 ERA, that's the second worst of his career. 1.34 whip, worst of his career. 9.4 hits per 9 innings, worst of his career. 2.67 opponent's batting average, career worst. 7.61 opponent's OPS, career worst. Well, what's going on? You saw this guy pitch well against the Yankees in London. You see the stuff with Erod, and we hear it all the time from the Red Sox organizationally. And it's not just members of the coaching staff and members of the front office. We actually hear it from players. We hear it from the Chris Sales of the world. We hear it from the David Prices of the world coming out of spring training every year, that Erod's stuff is the best on the team. We hear that all the time with Erod. And you can see why guys actually say that. You see, sometimes he has a fastball, 94, 95. He gets it up there easily. Looks like it's effortless, okay? And then you look at the changeup. That changeup is just flat out nasty. So I look at Erod, and you think about it, it's year 5. He's 26 years old. This is year 5 of this thing. Why hasn't he improved? Why hasn't he improved? Now, obviously, some of it is on himself, that he hasn't gotten any better, because it's the same issue year after year with Erod. There's no consistency. One start, he'll look like a guy that can be the front end of the rotation guy for years to come. And the next start, he'll look like a guy that shouldn't even be pitching on a Major League Baseball mound. That's what Erod does from start to start sometimes. Now, it's great that he's strung together 2 consecutive good starts. You try to build off that if you're the Red Sox from an organizational standpoint. But I look at this as a bigger issue with the Red Sox as an organization than I do with Erod in particular. Because I would ask you this at 617-779-7937. Who is the last great pitcher that the Red Sox have actually developed? I'd ask you that. Who have the Red Sox developed? You look at John Lester, that's pretty much it. In recent history, that's pretty much it. Because essentially, Erod is your guy. Remember, years ago in the Andrew Miller trade back in 2014, that's how you got Erod, right? So he is essentially your guy. Erod is your guy. He was the number one pitching prospect in the Baltimore Orioles organization. This guy has a ton of talent. We see the talent with Erod. But if you look through these World Series teams over the past years with the Red Sox, you go back to 04, Pedro came from Montreal. Schilling, of course, was with Arizona, but was with Philadelphia previously to that. You think back to 07. Yeah, Josh Beckett. Okay, that's somebody that you got from the Florida Marlins. Derek Lowe, I guess, would be the one other example, because you traded for him relatively early in his career, and he was a bullpen guy at that particular point in time, so you developed him into somewhat of a consistent starter. And really, he was a consistent starter for about that 4-year window. But you look at it, John Lester and Derek Lowe, that's it. These guys have not been able to develop competent starting pitchers within their own organization. They have to go outside externally to acquire these guys. Think about it. Rick Porcello, who was part of your World Series team, he came from Detroit. Okay, Chris Sale, he came from Chicago. David Price, we know he's in Tampa. He was in Toronto, and then he was in Detroit. So this isn't just with this front office in particular. I'm just not just pointing to the organization right now. I'm talking about as a systemic thing. This has been going on for years, where the Red Sox cannot develop starting pitching internally. And Erod is just the latest example of this. How can you tell me that this guy has not become a better pitcher? I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. And now I'm starting to just accept the fact that this is who Erod is. He's going to be an inconsistent pitcher for the bulk of his career. And that really aggravates you as somebody that watches this team on a day-to-day basis, because the talent is tantalizing. The guy has 94-95 easily for most starts, and he's got a changeup that is absolutely devastating that guys cannot hit. When Erod's changeup is on, guys aren't touching it. So why can't he be a more consistent starting pitcher, rather? And I put a lot of that on the organization. because we hear every year how great his stuff is. We hear all the time how much they're hyping up Erod. And just when it comes to the regular season right now, you look at it, he has a career worse in like four of the five major pitching categories. And that's alarming to me. How has he not taken any step forward whatsoever? That's what I don't understand as it pertains to Erod. And it's not the first time we've seen this with a pitcher that's come through the Red Sox organization. 617-779-7937 is your number. Brian Barrett with you for about the next hour and 45 minutes or so right here on WEI. Let's get to Paul in Westfield. Paul, what's up, my friend?
Right. Hey, Brian. How are you, bud?
Good. What do you got, man?
I can't wait to ask you about the Clippers picking up them two players, but I got this. The guy complained earlier that Mookie's overpaid because he did set a record in the playoffs for an MVP at 0-for-13 and then hit a home run. However, he was MVP, which is why we got there. So, again, let's not shred them for paying the guys like Eovaldi and him who got us there. We didn't expect this to happen this year.
Yeah, fair enough. But the point with Eovaldi is, Paul, there was the track record there with the injuries. So that's the contract that everybody at the time when they signed it, you knew that that was not going to work out well for the Red Sox because he's never really proven himself outside one run in October. And I get it. Like, if you wanted to bring him back on a short-term deal, that would make a little bit of sense. But to give him 4 years and $68 million when that elbow's a ticking time bomb, that's the thing that jumped off the page to me.
What? 4 years for $60 million? Shut my pie hole. That's ridiculous. You're right. One more quick question. With Toronto losing their best player and Paul George, hello, this is an open conference for us now, pretty much. Is that the biggest thing we can say from this transfer?
It is unbelievable, isn't it, Paul? I appreciate the phone call. You can grab his line if you'd like it at 617-779-7937. My bad, Paul. I thought you were done there, but he had another point. It's okay. It's all good. We'll talk again, Paul, soon. 617-779-7937 is the number. Yeah, that was crazy the other day. That was a lot of fun the other night when you just wake up and you're like, hold on. Kawhi went to the Clippers? Kawhi's going to the Clippers? He's leaving Toronto? And like from a Toronto perspective, what can you really do, right? You're the team that just won the NBA championship, and you gave Kawhi Leonard everything you possibly could have asked for, right? Because you knew going into trading for Kawhi, he may not stay long-term, and you got everything out of it, right? You treated him well, and one of the things he had an issue with the Spurs was the fact that they did not pay attention to his injury. They were telling him basically, no, it's this injury, and Kawhi's people were telling him, no, it's a different type of injury, and they wouldn't listen to Kawhi. So he goes over to Toronto. They only play him 60 games. They don't play him in a single back-to-back because they want to make sure he's healthy for the long term, if you will. So from a medical standpoint, they did everything right with Kawhi. They surround him with the proper team, good team around him. At the deadline, Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball operations there, he goes out there and he gets him Marcus Gasol. So they had a guy that could cover Joel Embiid when they get to a series against the 76ers. You did everything you possibly could have done if you're Toronto and he leaves. And there's nothing you could have done. He wanted to go to L.A. the whole time. He was trying to originally go to the Lakers when he was with the Spurs. So he wanted to go to L.A. But if you're Toronto, you're thinking to yourself, it was all worth it. So what if the guy left? You want a Now, you would have liked to have him, but you won a championship. And you knew there was a very good chance that he'd only stay for a year. So if you're Toronto, you gladly make that trade again because you were mediocre. With DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, you were just getting beat up by LeBron James in the postseason every year. He was sweeping you, it seemed like, each and every year in the postseason. So it was all worth it for Toronto because they won themselves a championship. But now, man, you think about it. You go from being the favorites, right, in the Eastern Conference. If you had Kawhi Leonard, you're the favorites to come out of the East again because we've seen right now you have to say he's the best player in the league because LeBron James dealing with an injury last year in terms of missed 17 games with a groin injury, did not make it into the postseason. And Kevin Durant, the other guy that would have a argument to be in the conversation for the greatest player in the world right now, well, he's probably never going to be the same player again because he's coming off a torn Achilles tendon. So Kawhi, you have to say, is the best player. So you're the favorites to come out of the East if Kawhi Leonard comes back to your team there in Toronto. But guess what? Now he's gone. And Toronto is now in a totally different position in terms of their organization. Now they have to decide, do we blow this thing and rebuild it? Do we get rid of Kyle Lowry, get rid of Serge Ibaka, try to rebuild around Pascal Siakam? So it's amazing to see where Toronto's at just a couple of days later. And how about Doc Rivers? I want to get into this later. Doc Rivers is going to coach Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. Where do you think the Celtics organization would be if Doc Rivers never wanted to leave? I want to get into that a little bit later. Let's get to Jim in Northampton. What's going on, Jim?
Yeah, you know, the example you were just given about lack of homegrown pitchers, in that example, you were rattling off all the championships the Red Sox have won. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the complaint. We've had a different strategy. We've traded prospects to get the pitchers that we've needed to win world championships.
No, fair enough, Jim.
I'm pretty happy. I got four titles.
Right, fair point. But I'm just saying, why can't they develop any homegrown talent? Why can't they develop any of these pitchers that they have in terms of the internal guys? Like Erod, to me, is somebody they traded for from the Orioles, number one pitching prospect. Why hasn't Erod been better? That's a question I have. The guy's got nasty stuff. Why can't he be more consistent? Every year we hear he's got this great stuff coming out of spring training. This is the year that he's going to take that next step. Why isn't he taking that next step?
Yeah, sure. But, you know, you could flip that around and say, you know, what about Casey Kelly, you know, top pitching prospect? And, we traded the guy away and whatever became of him. You know, pitching prospect, you just never know. Like, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. Some of them pan out, some of them don't. I would rather every year that the Red Sox go out and get rid of some of the guys that are highly valued on the farm to get a proven arm like a Chris Sale, like a Josh Beckett, like a Curt Schilling. I love that strategy. It wins me championships.
Jim, I don't have an issue with the strategy. I don't have an issue with going out and getting Curt Schilling, getting Pedro Martinez, getting Josh Beckett. I'm all for that. Getting Chris Sale, I'm all for that. All I'm saying is this. Why can't this organization ever develop their own pitchers? That's my question. I don't have an answer to it. It makes no sense to me whatsoever that they can't develop one guy outside of John Lester in the past decade that is a consistent starter in the rotation.
I guess you got a good point. I mean, but maybe it's strategic. You know, you trade Michael Kopech, who maybe was a guy that they were going to develop into the next good, you know, homegrown starting pitcher.
Yeah, the Sale trade.
You know, who did you give away in all of those deals? And I don't, you know, off the top of my head, you know, sitting here on my mobile phone, don't know, you know, the list of the guys that they gave away. But there were probably pitchers in every single one of those deals.
Jim, to your point, I much rather have positional players in my farm system rather than pitchers. I would much rather have that. But my old thing about it, and I appreciate the call, Jim. You can grab his line if you like. It's 617-779-7937. My whole thing is that you haven't been able to develop anybody outside of John Lester in terms of a legitimate bona fide starter in your rotation. You haven't developed anybody internally. Now, you've gone out there and externally made some nice moves, right? Because now all of a sudden the price contract looks okay, right? It looks okay right now, which for a long time we're saying this is an awful contract. This is an albatross of a contract. You made a move for Chris Sale and helped you win a World Series. The Porcello trade was great. You got rid of Yoenis Cespedes and you got Rick Porcello. It's kind of funny that Dave Dombrowski is the one that traded for Cespedes, okay? And now Dombrowski gets Rick Porcello back when he takes the job at the Boston Red Sox. But nonetheless, it's just kind of crazy how that connection happened. So they've done a good job of bringing in starting pitchers. Nobody would ever argue that. Pedro Martinez, Curt Schilling, Josh Beckett through the years. My whole thing about it is this, though. Just why can't you develop anybody in terms of internally? Why can't you develop a good quality starting pitcher? This has been one of the best organizations in the sport. I don't understand why they have this Achilles heel that they can't develop a starting pitcher. And every time I watch Erod on the mound, like watching him on Friday night, he has this outing that makes you salivate with the talent. The outing he had against the Yankees in London, the guy was absolutely outstanding. That's one of the best lineups in all of Major League Baseball, and he made them look silly for the majority of his start. So why can't you get that guy more often? It can't all be on the player if we've had all these guys come through the system and none of them developed into very good top-of-the-end rotation guys with the exception of John Lester. All right, a lot more to get into. If you want to hop on board, weigh in on your Red Sox. What do you make of where they're at as we get closer to the All-Star break? And one guy that has to take much of the blame for where the Red Sox are at right now, I'll get to that next. Your number is 617-779-7937. We'll get you trending in just a second here.
WEEI 93.7 FM.
Emphasizing the fastball pretty heavily today. Was that, you know, was that a game plan thing? Was that just a feel coming out of the bullpen today?
I don't know. I mean, I just got to throw more strikes, better quality pitches. I don't know. Just haven't been good recently. Just got to find a way.
I think mechanically, why do you have so much trouble?
Because I'm throwing the ball over the middle of the plate. You look at the pitches that they're hitting and doing major damage on, they're up, out, over. So just got to find a way to, you know, execute better when I need to.
All right, so the Red Sox have won 5 of 6. That was the voice of Chris Sale after his outing against the Blue Jays. You want to guess which game the Red Sox lost out of that streak? Or they won 5 of their 6 games? Oh, yeah, it was Chris Sale's start, the guy that you just gave $145 million to. What do you make of the performance of Chris Sale in the first half of the season? 617-779-7937. When I look at Sale, he is the number one reason the team is where it is right now. Now, I can give you the bullpen stuff. I understand it. That's from a front office perspective. Dave Dombrowski has not put a proper bullpen in place for this team. I would acknowledge that as well. But you have lost 12 out of Chris Sale's 18 starts. You turn that around, and he wins 12 out of his 18 starts, which I believe is fair enough to ask of your ace pitcher, if you will. This team is sitting at 55 wins, and they're right there in the division race. So this is the one guy you were supposed to be able to depend on every fifth day, or one of the guys you were supposed to be able to rely on every fifth day, and he hasn't shown up. He has still not shown up for the 2019 season, okay? But everybody in this town, for whatever reason, still loves Chris Sale. I don't understand it. From a fan base perspective, why do you guys all love Chris Sale? What is it that he's done for you? Now, I'm not trying to belittle what Chris Sale did during the regular season last year between April and August, because obviously that is essential to getting the number one seed, if you will, in the American League in the postseason. But in the postseason, the past 2 years, Chris Sale has not shown up. Yeah, he won one game against the Yankees last year, but after that, everybody else had to step it up and pitch on short rest like David Price did in Minute Maid Park because Chris Sale was unavailable. Chris Sale wasn't able to go out there and give you innings because he was injured. And that's what tends to happen with Chris Sale, is he breaks down in September. He has an ERA north of 350 his past 2 years with the Red Sox in September. Even if you want to give him the excuse last year when you needed him, he wasn't there. 2 years ago, he wasn't there in the postseason for you either. Remember, that Astros start, game one, gets racked. They lose that game. Gives up 3 home runs, 2 to Altuve and 1 to Bregman. Then he comes out of the bullpen in game 4, in a game you had the lead, about to force a game 5, and guess what happens in that game? Gives up a home run to Bregman. So in that series, 2 home runs, 2 Altuve, 2 to Bregman. So I don't understand why the love for Chris Sale. Like, can you imagine if this was David Price having this type of season? What people would be saying about David Price right now, despite the fact that he saved Chris Sale in the postseason last year? And that's when I kind of want to look at this thing. So you look at this right now. Which contract would you rather have going forward? Chris Sale's or David Price's? And to put the numbers into perspective, David Price opted in. He has 3 years remaining at $32 million each of those seasons. You juxtapose that with Chris Sale. He starts the 5-year extension next season. Remember, he's not technically on that 5-year extension yet. So he starts that extension next season, and it runs through at least the 2024 season. So to put the ages out there, 2024 will be Chris Sale's 35-year-old season, and David Price is under contract through his 36-year-old season. So which contract would you rather have? 617-779-7937. And by the way, Chris Sale's contract, it averages about $20 million per season. He'll make $30 next year. I look at it right now, and I've seen David Price make an adjustment. David Price is a painter, right? He paints on the outside portion of the plate. He paints on the inside portion of the plate. He is great in terms of the location. David Price has gone from that overpowering pitcher, the Randy Johnson back when he first came up into Major League Baseball. That's what David Price was. Remember, we all remember it as a Red Sox fan when in 2008, the guy came out of the bullpen in the American League Championship Series against the Red Sox to clinch a World Series for the Rays. The guy was firing, right? He used to be that guy that lived between 95 and 96. Okay, now he's 90, 91, 92 miles an hour on his fastball, but every pitch is located. That's what David Price does right now. He's made the adjustment, not to mention his changeup right now is absolutely devastating. He threw one today that just absolutely dropped off. No chance at hitting that thing whatsoever. Price has been absolutely phenomenal in terms of developing that changeup. He can throw it at any point during the count. So he's made that adjustment in terms of developing his stuff based on his age, realizing that I can't dial it up to 95, 96 anymore. I got to make that adjustment. And yeah, there was a rough patch over the past couple of years, but now he's adjusted to become the location pitcher rather than the power pitcher, if you will. When I look at Chris Sale, he's somebody that is probably going to have to make a similar adjustment. But do we trust he's going to be able to make the adjustment? Because this year, he hasn't been able to make it whatsoever. And the ERA has jumped from 211 to 405 this year, or 404.
The ball over the middle of the plate.
Yeah, damn right you're leaving the ball over the middle of the plate, and in particular against the Blue Jays the other night. Think about it. He gives up 3 home runs on fastballs the other night, does Chris Sale. That's not Chris Sale. The issue with Chris Sale is He used to miss in the zone. And when Chris Sale would miss in the zone, he would still get swings and misses. But the problem now is when he doesn't locate his pitches, the seventh hitter and the ninth hitter in the Toronto Blue Jays order are taking him out of the ballpark. Guys in the Chicago White Sox order are making him pay when he misses in terms of location. So when I look at Chris Sale, I wonder about this guy aging well. Because when I look at David Price, he's a big dude. He's 6'5", 215 pounds. You look at Chris Sale, he's 6'6", and he's about a buck 80. He's a small guy. You look at some of the pitchers across Major League Baseball that have aged well. It's Justin Verlander, it's Max Scherzer, it's guys that are big. Chris Sale, yeah, he's got height. He's 6'6", but he only weighs 180 pounds. Not to mention the fact, you look at the motion of David Price compared to the motion of Chris Sale. Right, David Price's motion, there's a lot less stress than there is with Chris Sale. Chris Sale has that crossfire approach, right, where it's essentially all arm and all elbow. That's why I'm surprised that until last year, Chris Sale hasn't really had a serious injury. That had always surprised me, even going back to his days in Chicago, because he has such a violent motion. It's really amazing that he hasn't suffered anything sustainable at this particular point in time. And now you look at Chris Sale in terms of the contract, he's going to start that extension next year. David Price has three more years remaining, and I kind of feel like I know what David Price is going forward. He's going to be a guy for the next 2 to 3 years that can continue to paint, continue to locate his fastball, and he's going to have that devastating changeup going forward so I can depend on him every fifth day. With Chris Sale, I don't know if he's going to be able to make that adjustment into a Tom Glavine-like pitcher. In fact, I doubt he's going to be able to do that. I doubt Chris Sale is going to be able to do that. And I mentioned this briefly the other day. What Chris Sale's kind of reminding me of, this drop-off, is very similar to Tim Lincecum. Now, Tim Lincecum was short, too. He's 5'11", but he's a small guy, too, in terms of the weight, like Chris Sale. 170 pounds for Lincecum. Sale is about a buck 80. And you look at what Tim Lincecum did. So, Tim Lincecum in 2012 went from, in 2011, he had a 274 ERA. And then in 2012, that bumped up to 518. Chris Sale this year has gone from a 211 ERA to a 404 ERA. Lincecum, in terms of the strikeouts, very similar in 2011 and 2012, 9.2 and 9. So right around the same thing. Chris Sale, same thing. His strikeouts are actually up this season. But what we're seeing, just like we saw with Tim Lincecum, with Chris Sale, is they started to miss in the zone, and guys were all over them, right? So it went very, very quickly for Tim Lincecum. And like with Tim Lincecum, we saw flashes of the old Tim Lincecum, where in 2014 he threw a pair of no-hitters to the San Diego Padres, right? And we look at Chris Sale, we're seeing moments of that great Chris Sale, where we saw against the Royals, complete game shutout. You think about it from the Colorado Rockies perspective, what's he doing that start? He goes out there, he strikes out 17 guys. So we've seen flashes of the great Chris Sale, but he doesn't have it every night like he used to have it every night, at least from April to August. So my fear with Chris Sale is that he's going to turn into Tim Lincecum, because he's not built like some of these premier pitchers across Major League Baseball that have aged well. Like David Price, for example, we're just mentioning he's 215. Max Scherzer, 215 pounds. Verlander, 225 pounds. Chris Sale is 180 pounds, and he doesn't generate the bulk of his power from his legs. Okay, and the success of Chris Sale has been that crossfire angle, if you will, right? So one of the unique things about Chris Sale, which has made him great, which has made him a Cy Young caliber pitcher, which made him into the guy that struck out 300 batters, is the delivery's different, right? It's kind of that three-quarter delivery, and he's got a lot of stuff going on. He's herky-jerky. What made Tim Lincecum great for all those years with the Giants, and Chris Sale was better longer than Tim Lincecum was, but what made Tim Lincecum great with the Giants was he had an odd delivery, right? He was labeled the freak. He had an odd delivery, very different delivery than anybody else we've really seen in the history of the sport. Chris Sale, very different delivery. So they both had odd deliveries. They're both very slight, 180 pounds and 170 pounds. That's why I look at Chris Sale and I start to think, wow, maybe we've already seen the best of this guy. Because right now we're 18 games into this thing. You can't give me excuses anymore as it pertains to Chris Sale. Like, you could have given me those excuses at the beginning of the season. Oh, he wasn't ramped up. He wasn't ready for the regular season because of how they held him back in spring training, just like all the other Red Sox starters. Well, that worked with David Price for two starts. He didn't pitch well. Then he got it going. Okay, Chris Sale had a little middle portion of the season so far in terms of he sucked at the beginning. He has sucked the past three outings. He had that portion in the middle of the season where he was okay. he was fine. He saw some really, really high points like the Royals start and like the Rockies start. He had some mediocre starts in there as well. But now you can't tell me that it's about the spring training element to Chris Sale. So there's no excuses at this particular point in time. And how do you rationalize or how do you defend the fact that against the White Sox, the guy can't locate his slider in the first inning? How do you defend the fact that against the Blue Jays, he gives up three home runs in terms of the fastball? When is he going to get his command back? Because now we're talking about 18 starts into the season. And when I look at it from that perspective, I'm starting to think this. I'm starting to think that Chris Sale is overthrowing because he's realizing I don't have 94, 95 easily like I used to have it. I can get to that level once in a while, but I have to put more effort into it. So I'm wondering if Chris Sale overthrowing is leading to him missing in the zone way too much. So that's my fear with Chris Sale going forward. I don't look at him as a guy that's going to age well. When I look at guys aging well on the mound, I look at big guys, right? The only small pitcher I remember in recent history that aged well is Pedro Martinez. I think about guys that are big. Curt Schilling, huge legs. Max Scherzer, big dude. Justin Verlander, big guy. I look at Chris Sale, skinny, 180 pounds. Are you guys sure he's going to age well? Because I certainly think the contract's been atrocious this year. But what do you think it's going to look like going forward? That's why Price, three more years at this money, considering he's made the change to be a finesse pitcher rather than a power pitcher. Yeah, I'll take Price's contract any day of the week. And nobody would have said that prior to the season. Everybody would have said, oh, give me Sale's contract. And that's why I go back to Dombrowski in the offseason. Chris Sale had proven the past three Septembers, if you go back to his final year in Chicago as well, he breaks down in September. He has a 350 ERA, north of 350 each of the last three Septembers. So I don't understand why organizationally they were in a hurry to re-sign Chris Sale because he wanted to be here, because he's gritty, because the fan base loves him. It made no sense to me whatsoever. At least prove to me that you can stay healthy in September one of these years, and then I'll give you a contract. But you got to prove that to me because so far, Chris Sale has never proven that he can stay late down the stretch of a season, especially as a member of the Red Sox, where he's been a liability over the past couple of postseasons. All right, a lot more to get into. What do you make of where your Red Sox are at as they're now 9 games back of the Yankees as we approach the All-Star break? Home Run Derby tomorrow night, All-Star game on Tuesday night. Who do you blame for where the Red Sox are at? Do you have faith that they can get it together in the second half of the season and actually be a bona fide legitimate contender? Your number 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour and 15 minutes or so here, right here on WEI.
93.7 FM, WEI.
So what he did in October, but people don't talk about what he did in the second part of the season last year, and he's been consistent throughout the whole process. You know, even you know his first two starts, the one in Oakland, you know, he threw the ball well. In Arizona, only one bad inning, but after that, he's been consistent. Yeah, the Texas one, but we found a way to come back from that one, and you know, every 5 days, we know what we're getting. You know, he makes adjustments. You know, one day he's 94, another day he's 89, 90 with the changeup and precision, and that's why he's great. You know, that's why he's won 150 games in the big leagues, and the ERAs, it is what it is, and the strikeouts, you know, he's been one of the best for the last 11 years, and I'm very proud of him.
150 wins now for David Price. 617-779-7937 is your number. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so here on WEI. All right, so as it pertains to David Price, I just want to make sure that everybody continues to refer to him as the ace of the staff because he's the only guy on the staff with an ERA under 4. So until Chris Sale, 2018 version of Chris Sale during the regular season, because postseason Chris Sale doesn't exist to begin with, but until Chris Sale of the regular season shows up for this season, we need to refer to David Price as the ace of the staff because Chris Sale's not an ace. You can't have a 4.04 ERA and be considered an ace of a pitching staff. I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it. I'm not calling Chris Sale an ace until he proves again that he's actually an ace. Ever since he got the contract, he's not been the same guy. You go back to the injury last year, has not been the same guy since then. So until Chris Sale proves that he is once again an ace, David Price will be considered the ace of the Red Sox pitching staff. Because an ace means that every fifth day you depend on that guy. Alex Cora just said, every fifth day we can depend on David Price. Can you depend on Chris Sale right now? Can you depend on Chris Sale? I look at one player who should shoulder the most blame for where this team's at right now. It's Chris Sale. If I'm looking at one player, it's Chris Sale. Now, the bullpen as a group has been an atrocity, but if you're looking at one player, it has to be Chris Sale. You can't be the ace of the staff, and the team is losing 12 out of your 18 starts. 617-779-7937. Let's get to Rich in North Providence. What's up, Rich?
Good evening, Brian. How are you?
Good. How you doing, my friend?
Good, thank you. I just appreciate, again, how much you bring to the conversation about how important it is to have the legs, literally the legs, to get through a season and to get through a career.
Yeah, and look at Chris Sale. He's got skinny legs, and that delivery, I worry about it long term because I understand it's what's made him great, but that crossfire form, it reminds me of, now, not that it was similar to Tim Lincecum, but they both had odd deliveries. They're both slight of build, and these great pitchers that we've seen throughout history, most of them, with the exception of like Pedro recently, they've all been bigger guys.
Yes, and he puts a lot of, with that motion that he has, he puts an awful lot of strain on that shoulder and that elbow of his.
Yeah, and maybe this is when Rich, you know, last year he had the shoulder injury in September and was really a non-factor in the postseason. Maybe all that violence on his elbow and his shoulder is catching up to him.
Absolutely. Going back to, if I may, because he was one of my favorites, especially battling through leukemia and all, and still a big salute out to John Lester for all that he went through and all that he's accomplished. What a career.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been a no-brainer to have re-signed him. It would have been a no-brainer to me after the guy put up one season hitting .321, 28 home runs, and 103 RBIs. A no-brainer to bring back Adrian Beltre. A no-brainer.
Yeah, Beltre, and remember, until Devers, really, that left a hole at third base. Remember, you were trotting out guys like Middlebrooks for a couple of years. Now, Bogarts came up in 2013, played it for a little bit. Well, we knew he was going to be a shortstop. They couldn't find, and then they invested money in Pablo Sandoval. But you're right. I mean, Beltre was a great player for the Red Sox that one year. That was odd that they just let him go, considering the fact that the guys, he was a great defensive player too, Rich.
Yes. And, I mean, like, again, he had that build, that sort of like, you know, that pit bull build that it was like, you know, he wasn't just going to break down.
Yeah. And you know what, Rich?
You know,
you mentioned John Lester. You know, right now, at the age of 35, he's having a better season than Chris Sale is at the age of 29.
All right. There you go.
And again, big guy, 6'4", 240.
I don't understand. How do these guys don't, you know, it's like just common sense. Look at the build that John Lester has. Look at the build that Chris Sale has. I mean, hello.
And you know what aggravated me, Rich, about the extension with Chris Sale? Because I've said multiple times, I remember when it initially happened, prove it to me that you're healthy in September and I'll give you a contract extension. But he hasn't proven it since he's been a Red Sox. And it made no sense to give him the contract at that time. And they were comparing it to the Lester contract where they botched that situation. But those two situations in and of themselves were different because Lester was coming off this great 2013 postseason run where he was your best pitcher. That year was about Lester on the mound and David Ortiz at the plate where he was outstanding. I still don't know why Mike Matheny continued to pitch to him, but nonetheless, I digress. He was great in the postseason that year. Sale is coming off 2 years where he broke down in September, and really he was a non-factor for you in the postseason. So those two things, they should not have related them to each other.
Yeah, and just going back to Beltre, I mean, that one season he made $10 million. So he wants $5 million more a year. Oh, well, that's just too much money. You know, my goodness.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. And, Rich, I appreciate the call. Great stuff. You can grab his line if you'd like at 617-779-7937. Remember, part of the issue that Devers had when he originally came up to the Red Sox was that he wasn't ready. Devers wasn't ready when he initially came up. Now, this year, he's taken off at the age of 22, but it took him a while to get to this point. Did it for Devers. Remember, we had legitimately people, and I told them they were crazy at the time, that they were so upset with the defense at the beginning of the year. This is literally a conversation we had at the beginning of the year during Red Sox Review. People wanted Devers back to AAA. Now, at that particular point in time, even then, I was like, you got to be crazy, right? Now, this kid's bat is going to play, and we've seen the bat. He's one of the best hitters in all of Major League Baseball. But to the original point, Beltre would have supplied you that bridge to get to Devers, where you didn't have to rush him up a little too early. Now, it's all worked out for Devers now, but you could add Beltre for a couple of years at third base, and he was outstanding the 1 year he was in Boston. That guy's an incredible defensive player as well. All right, a lot more to get into if you want to hop on board. What you think of the Red Sox right now at this particular point in the season as they're nine games back. Who do you blame? Are you worried about the Chris Sale contract going forward? Your number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so right here on WEI.
I think we blew the John Lester. We blew re-signing him in spring training.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.